Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to Season 12 of the Parenting Aces podcast, a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and this week we have returning as our guest, Hernan Chosa, who is a tennis parent, a former professional tennis player, and a parent educator based in Argentina. He is such a great guy to chat with and to learn from, and is doing such good work in terms of writing articles, providing content for websites and podcasts such as ours, and also doing one-on-one work with parents who want to do a better job helping their kids achieve their goals in tennis and really in any sport or high-level pursuit. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Hernan. And before I bring him on, just a quick reminder, if you haven't already, we'd love for you to become a premium member of Parenting Aces. Just go to our website, parentingaces.com, and click on the join button to see your options. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with fellow tennis parent, Hernan Chosa. Hernan, welcome back to the podcast. It's always lovely to chat with you and hear your beautiful accent from down below the equator. So welcome back to Parenting Aces.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you for having me today. And it's been a while since we've talked in our first conversation. Yeah, a couple of years.
Yeah. Though we have stayed in contact, and you've been really good about keeping me up to speed on what's happening in your life with your writing. And we're going to delve into that a little deeper. But before we do, I would love for you to just kind of give our audience a little refresh on your life in tennis and how you got started playing the game.
Yeah, I started playing really early at 6-7 years old because it was a major tennis player in Argentina called Guillermo Vilas, and there was a massive change here. And it at the beginning it was an elite sport, and he made it massive. So my parents promote tennis on me and in my sister. I started with classes, and then I really enjoyed the game. You know, I can spend hours at the wall, and as time went by, I became better, and I tried to practice more. And then I started playing the tournaments. And at 14, 15, I became very serious about that. And then I made a kind of career. You know, I played the pros. I've been 300 in the world, played some majors in the qualifying of French Open and junior tournaments too. So it was a pretty nice path for everyone. You travel around the world. You meet new people. You challenge yourself also. It's a nice sport. It's a big sport. And nowadays, it's very maybe difficult to kids to play tennis because there are many choices. But tennis is a main sport, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And now you're the father of two boys. They're not kids anymore. They're growing up. But can you talk a little bit about what made you decide to introduce them to tennis and kind of how things shifted for you once you were the parent of a player instead of a player yourself?
In fact, tennis was a natural in my family because I was married. I'm married to Marianne, and her brother plays tennis with me on the tour. And my two kids, since they were 3-4 years old, watched me play, and we start on a small court or maybe in the wall just hitting balls and in the streets also. So they develop the skills really early. And I didn't know back then that they weren't so good. They were copying my tennis, you know. And I thought I had a couple of stars, and it wasn't that case. And what happened to many parents is that they start to live the other kids' life through sports and not make them develop their own inner drive and I make many mistakes on the path, but it was a very fulfilling because I have tons of experience of what not to do. And the good thing is,
it's a big club, Hernan. I'm in that club too. Yes.
It's getting bigger. It's getting bigger all the time. And the good thing is I can play right now with my two kids. One is 25 and one is 24. And we play the three of us and we have a good time. And it wasn't so nice back then, maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah. And you went through something similar to what I went through with my son, which is your older boy decided that he was done with the sport, stopped competing kind of cold turkey. And you and I have talked before about, you know, that feeling of loss when your child decides to stop training, stop competing. And it's not just that they're stopping something that was a big part of their lives, but it also pulls you away from something that you've enjoyed and invested a lot of time and energy into as the parent. You have a social life around your child's tennis. Your weekends, your holidays are all spent traveling to tournaments, sitting at tournaments. And so it is a big loss when they decide that they no longer want to pursue the game at that high level. But what you've done in recent years is use that to help you help other parents and explain to other parents how to change their mindset around their child's pursuit. And you have a book called Parent Shift, and you've been doing a lot of writing about that exact topic. So I want to delve into that a little more with you today and talk about what do you mean by parent shift?
There are a couple of things that you said that this is a big shift when your son quits, in this case, tennis. Maybe you feel the loss. In my case, I feel a relief because the pressure was too big for me because as a former tennis player, I wasn't supposed to make any mistakes. Mm. You know, I had that pressure. So for me, when he quit tennis, it was a relief and it was an opportunity to change myself because my relationship with my elder son, it was broken. So I have to change. And that what I mean when I mean parent shift, that you have to change the relationship with your son. So I had to travel a hard path, maybe one, two, a couple of years. I wrote in that moment, my son is a tennis player. That is it's maybe a narrative about the junior circuit and it's in an ironic way. And it starts to me to realize that many parents had the same thing, you know. They try to make their kid, the son or daughter, make certain things and they slow down their inner drive. So I start, as you say, writing or being a podcast guest. I'm making some workout to create some awareness because you know that there isn't an industry about this topic.
Right.
You have to create the industry. We have to create the pain point because every parent don't realize that he's making some mistakes. You know, he thinks that the coach is doing the wrong thing or his son or daughter are doing the wrong stuff. And I encourage parents to take a look inside and be aware of their own actions, and they can make a big shift in the son or daughter results for sure.
Hmm. And when you say, you know, that we as parents have to be the ones to change, can you give us some specifics on things that we need to be reflecting on and maybe doing some work on ourselves?
The main thing that I think we can work on is the way we speak to our kids. We have to be aware of our words because our words are like a sword, you know. The way you behave, maybe your kid is playing a game and you're scared and you transmute that scaredness to your kid, you know. So we are some kind of a mirror. They copy our behaviors. So we have to be aware of our actions. Or maybe we say, okay, this match is very tough and that kid plays so good. And we are we're developing some fear in our son, you know. So our words are key. And the first thing to be aware of, and another thing is, maybe you want to say something to a kid. Maybe stop 5 seconds, think about it. And if you want to say, say it. But don't say the first thing it comes to your mind. Don't say the first thing, but for sure it's going to be wrong. For sure.
That is true. That is true. And you know, typically our first impulse is just to kind of blurt, right? Where we're speaking from a place of passion, a place of love, a place of wanting to help. But as you say, our words don't always transmit the message that we intend or think we're transmitting. It's not always received in the manner in which it's intended. And we know kids, you know, they hear things sometimes differently than what we say, or sometimes they hear them exactly as we say them, and we don't realize that we're saying them in such a way to cause upset, fear, anxiety, whatever it is.
Yeah, there's something, you know, when I was playing junior tournaments in Italy, and you know something, when you're a player and you don't know the other guy, maybe you can beat him easily. And afterwards they say, hey, this guy is ranked number 5. And I said, it doesn't look to me that he was so good. Mm. Once I was playing first round at an Italian tournament under 18, and I lost 7-5 on the third set with a guy, red guy, that I thought, this guy is not so good in red clay. How can I lose with this guy? And that guy was Wayne Ferreira, number 5 in the world. But I didn't know him.
Yeah.
And I said, this guy is like me, you know? So maybe when we speak to our kids that the other players are so good, we are scaring them, you know? Mm-hmm. Now the message is, you can beat everyone. You can beat everyone. Just go to the court and do your thing, you know?
Right. And this is why you play the match, right? We've become so bogged down and caught up in the whole ratings and rankings thing. And, oh, you know, I'm a 9 and he's a 10. So I've lost the match before I've even walked on the court. Right. And it's really a shame. And we've done a lot of episodes lately about ratings and rankings and the appropriate way to look at them and use them to really help our kids in that long-term athletic development, rather than focusing so much on this match, you know, this win or loss, what's it going to do to my rating this week? And yeah, it's very tough as parents, because what else do we have to glom onto? That's the ratings and the rankings are black and white. They're right there. It's easy, you know, to look at that and use that as a gauge.
Yeah, but you know, something I realized over time, at the very beginning, I was focused on my kids' technique. And I realized that tennis, as every sport game and life, is a mind game. If you don't believe in yourself, nobody will believe in you. So forget the rankings, train your kids' mind. Search for a pro to train your kids' mind. And maybe he don't succeed at sports, but he will succeed at life for sure. I was very focused at the beginning technique. It's nice to have a nice technique, mm-hmm. but the mind game, it's everything. You have to believe it.
How do you find someone that is good at training juniors on the mental side of the game? What are some things that, you know, if you had to go back and do this again, that you would look for in a coach that would indicate to you that they know how to do this piece of the athletic development?
You know, something I've been reading a lot lately about mind. I read about Tim Grover, Kobe Bryant's coach, and Michael Jordan's coach, David Goggins, an amazing guy. He was a former Navy SEAL. I would go with a guy that can dominate his mind, you know, because maybe you find a guy that is a psychologist. He has the badges about it, but he don't even govern his own life, you know. So you have to search for a person that can develop himself and be a strong-minded. So it's a certain thing. And the other thing is important in kids, that there have to be certain chemistry between the coach and the kid, you know. And that bondage is very difficult to get. And when it breaks, it breaks. So I have many coaches with my kid, and I switch coaches, and maybe I made some kind of mistakes, but coaches have to be aware of that bonding. And kids at the very beginning are 100% in, but then maybe for some mistakes, the bonding starts to break, you know. And my kid quit at 15, but he didn't quit at 15. Maybe he was quitting at 12, 13, 14, and that was the moment.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you're searching for that coach, are there questions that you know now that you can share with our audience that you wish you had asked of those coaches that didn't work well for your son?
As a former tennis player, I was kind of, I knew certain things, you know, when things will go wrong. So sometimes I have maybe four or five coaches of my kid, and maybe one listened to me and we have a really good bonding, was the one who developed El Potro, Marcelo Gomez. That guy listened to me, and he understands that I know the game, but the other kids, maybe the other coaches, maybe they are some kind of jealous, you know, what he's talking about. So it's different, it's difficult. And when you're not from the sport, it's better, because as you don't know, it's easier. So, but there are certain things that you can do to develop your mind. I can tell you really quick a couple of things. Mm-hmm. You have to do the things that you don't want to do every day. I just written a book. It's called Put Your Mask On First. It's in Spanish and translated in English. And I'll talk about all that things, because life isn't easy. So if you want to grow, you have to get out of your comfort zone. If you do things every day outside your comfort zone, you will grow. So you have to put yourself in such place. Then you have to search about a good environment, a competitive environment, not a negative one. You have to get people that challenge yourself and not get jealous about your wins, you know. People to support you. Maybe in tennis, the environment is very important. You know, the other day I told you that I went to Madrid to see to watch a Master 1000, and a players team, maybe four or five players, and I went to see Francisco Segundo, and I was talking to his father, and maybe it's not an amazing coach that you need to be a pro. You need an amazing environment, because you are traveling every week. You're traveling too many weeks, and you're too many weeks outside from your home. So you have to be in a happy mood. You have to be comfortable. So you need some kind of environment, you know?
Mm-hmm. And Fran, just for our listeners, Fran played college tennis here at the University of South Carolina and is now on the pro tour and is in Paris at Roland Garros. And I haven't followed him so far this week. I have been a little distracted, but do you know how he's doing in Paris?
Yeah, he's in the second round. He won yesterday. And I have a couple of highlights, because I know him very well, because he used to play with my elder son, Julian. And when he was young, he was maybe 40 in the country. He wasn't in the best of the country. And he played totally different. He has maybe a low forehand, no backhand. He didn't want to run, but he understood the game. You know, he understood the game, and he was a tough guy, a strategic guy. And something weird happened, because he went to college and he spent there maybe 6 months, and he came back, and he didn't tell no one that he was coming back. Mm-hmm. And when he was at the airport in Buenos Aires, he called his father, he returned, and he said he wanted to play in the tour. And he said something important, because before that, he put every ball on the court, and he said, no, I want to hit the ball. I want to hit the ball. And his father said to him, okay, if you want to hit it, you have to hit every ball. So you don't hit half, you hit everything. And now he's one of the most prominent players on the tour. He's 25 and he's 23 in the rankings. He made quarterfinals in Rome. He beat Sinner. and he's close to the top 10, but he listened to his inner voice. You know, he said, I want to play this way. There was no coach in his side that said to him what to do. He decided. That's what we need to our kids to understand, that they have to decide. Parents have to understand that kids have to decide. It's not an outside decision. It's an inner decision.
Do you know what his dad's response was when he came home from university?
What?
How did his dad respond when he just showed up at home after leaving for university in the States?
Yeah. He was very happy because when he left to college, he was kind of upset. His father has an academy and he coached many players. And he has also a brother that has an amazing track record. And the other important thing is that his brother, Juan Manuel, was the star of the family. He was number one in every under 12, under 14. He won the Orange Bowl. But now Fran is the star, you know. He was the underdog and he switched that thing. So it's a very competitive family. You have a competitive environment.
Yeah.
That's important.
Do you think that has really contributed to Fran kind of climbing the rankings so quickly now? That competitive family environment and the fact that the family respected his own desire to play a certain way and then supported that pathway for him.
Yeah, that was key. And the other thing that was important, that he has no sponsors. So he got some money from college that they pay something, and he went to play three futures, and maybe he won a couple and maybe won semifinals. So if you know too many players have sponsors because they spend a lot of money for many years, his brother has a sponsor, but himself didn't. Mm-hmm. So now all the money is for him, you know, so he had all the prize.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun to watch these guys kind of transition. Cam Norrie is another player like that who, you know, came to the States, went to college, played at TCU, had success there, and has really climbed up the rankings on the professional tour in the last few years. So we've seen that happen a lot, but they're not household names, these guys. I mean, maybe Fran is in Argentina, but in the States, I don't, you know, think he would necessarily be a household name. Same with Cam Norrie. And yet these are guys that have kind of forged their own way through the professional ranks and really climbed quickly.
Yeah, you know something, they're different things. Maybe one U.S. guy that plays college can go through the tour or not. And maybe college is the main goal for a U.S. player. Mm-hmm. And Fran's father has some theory that he's right, because he said that there's no Argentinian player that plays after college. Mm-hmm. Why? Because during college, everything is okay. You have rackets, you have strings, you have clothes, amazing facilities. When you have to start playing on the tour, you are in no very good tournaments, no very good places. So you have to go through a path, maybe 2, 3, 4 years, very uncomfortable. So it's easier to step out that pro career. In the France case, he was only 6 months and he wanted to play.
Mm. Yeah. So it goes back to that, putting yourself in uncomfortable positions, right? That you're saying going to college is comfortable for most of these kids, that they have everything they need. They have the coach taking care of them. They have the physio, they have the gym, they have everything at their disposal. And so they get too comfortable. And then when they move back out onto the pro tour, all of a sudden they're thrown into a very uncomfortable environment.
Well, there are two sides, because a college student have to study, have to play the sport, and have to get results. You need almost three. So it's not so comfortable, but it's more uncomfortable than playing the tour when you're just starting.
Yeah.
So they're kind of different. But I think that's an excellent path. And maybe if you want a pro career, you can go to an amazing program. And now you can play some tournaments between seasons and just tennis. Now I think it's wide open. There isn't one player that owns the circuit. There's a transition right now. Mm-hmm. That's why maybe Fran is very focused and very high in the rankings. You know, Cameron Norrie is number 12, and you see him playing, and maybe you say, okay, 12, not outstanding. So there's a place for everyone there, and it's a lot of money. So one thing that Fran's father said to me is that tennis is a tunnel. And the problem is when you're in the middle and you don't see the light. But if you continue walking, there's an end of the tunnel, you know. So if you continue playing, then the light will show up. Mm-hmm. So as many business, you know, it's not a 1 year success. You have to, yeah, maybe your podcast. How many years are you posting?
Yeah.
and the other day you interviewed Rick Macy. It's amazing. Rick Macy, I used Rick Macy's video to tune up my serve, you know.
Yeah.
It's amazing, that guy.
That's awesome. I want to get back to your parent education work that you're doing, because you and I are, you know, we're in this in a very similar field, but we're coming at it from different angles, given the fact that you were a professional tennis player yourself. You have so much more knowledge on that side of things. And another piece of your work, Hernan, is that you're doing these weekly, I don't know if you call them blogs, articles, but you're publishing weekly. And when you first started, you had told me that one of the purposes of that was so that you could get more fluent writing in English. Your English is amazing, way better than my Spanish. But there's also another purpose to that, not just trying to get better in English, because there are lots of things you could do to get better in English. So what made you want to start sharing these ideas and really delving into the parent education piece of this?
Well, the world speaks in English, you know. I can write in Spanish and you have some kind of ceiling. So as I can do both, I work a lot in my English last three years, and I improve, as you said, but it's a daily practice, you know. So I commit myself to do the uncomfortable and post a weekly I call Writing Wednesdays. So my followers can be engaged, my followers can get some things for free, you know, and can get some advices and can forward that email to a friend that is in need. So yeah, that's the main thing. I develop certain kind of, how to say, products or tools, because I have a course, and my course is to build muscle, you know, is to create habits. You have 25 videos with one task every video, so you are changing your behavior. And then I do one-on-one coaching, that you maybe do the same thing, you deal with a specific problem, and you give the other person a way, an action plan, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I have the books that there's some stories, my story, my kids' stories, and some experiences. And with all the three things, it's a package that I think is a useful package for every parent too that have kids in sports. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not limited to tennis, as you said, it's kids in sports, but it's not even limited to sports, quite honestly. It's parents of kids who are pursuing any passion, whether it's the arts, whether it's academics, STEM, whatever it is that the kids are pursuing at a high level, there is that challenge for the parent to support the child, also impose boundaries, also teach the family ethos and uphold that, also, you know, make sure that, as you and I talk about a lot, the relationship with the child remains healthy, and that the child remains healthy mentally and emotionally throughout the process. So, you know, the things that you and I both talk about really cross lots of boundaries, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really enjoy when my relationship with my kids is healthy, because first, I can behave different than what I preach. So I have to be outstanding in my conversation with them and limit the words and the moments. Maybe for a couple of days, I don't talk to them because there's no need to talk, you know? So it's an important training for me being in this business. Mm. So that's one thing. The other thing is that we are in a different period when we were young, where all our dads or mom tell it was mandatory and that there was no complaint about it. Now you have to negotiate, you have to deal, you have to understand more. So it's more difficult, you know, so you have to be more aware. The other thing that I realized is that if you let the kids express themselves, they're always right. They're always right. But you have to give them the space to do it and create the atmosphere, the environment to make so, you know. So yeah, it's a challenge, it's an everyday challenge. Maybe you listen to me and you think, you did it. No, I'm doing it every day. Every day I have the chance to be better or worse. You know, in every interaction you can do it wrong or you can do it right. And no matter what happened the day before, tomorrow is another day, another challenge.
Yeah, for sure. When you look back at your now, what your oldest is, how old did you say? 25 now?
25, yeah.
Yeah. So looking back on your 25 years of being a parent, is there a moment that jumps out at you as the worst moment of your parenting that you can now look at and say, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I said that, or I cannot believe I did that, or I cannot believe I sat back and let that happen?
It wasn't one thing. It was a parenting model. I was copying my father model. Mm-hmm. See, my son quit tennis and I have to find another way to approach my kid, you know? So yeah, maybe as I told you that kids are always right. Once Julian was 9 years old and he has to play a semifinal in under 10, and we play. He played a Sunday afternoon and he played a tough guy that steal balls. And I didn't say to him that he was going to play on Sunday. Maybe he will default that, you know, because I didn't want to go through all that thing, you know, because under 10. Matches are earned for one ball, you know, so yeah. That's tough. And then I say, you're supposed to play today, but I say, it's better not to go. And he said to me something very, very enlightening. He said, I don't train to default. Okay. We have to.
9 years old. Wow.
9 years old. I don't train to default. Wow. We went there. It was a mess and he won 6-4 in the first set, but it's always right, you know. Yeah. Kids are always right.
Yeah. So that's from the mouths of babes, right? They say. And so what did you take from that? And how did that change how you communicated with Julian?
Well, first when he quit tennis, everything I said, it was wrong. Hmm. Everything I said, it was wrong. He was in the second day on the preseason, and then the second day I went to watch his practice. One thing that I highly recommend to avoid it. And highly recommend. And he was not doing his best effort. And I said some things to him. Then we went to the car and I told my wife and she said another things. And he said, okay, if it's a problem in this family, I quit playing tennis. Mm-hmm. So the other day when I went to wake up him, he said, I quit tennis, I'm done. And he was done. And I had to make tons of silence for maybe 6 months.
Wow. That's a long time.
That's a long time because everything I said, it was a mistake. So it was better not to. And then one important thing that I did, I was started focusing on myself, on my exercise, on my job, things that many parents leave behind when they have a kid in sports, you know. They occupy their time thinking about the racket, the coach, the string, instead of their job, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't manage to play some tournaments. So it's better to have a nice job or have a profitable company. So I start taking care of myself. And then there was a 2 years after that, he said to me on Christmas Eve that he wanted to return tennis to play college tennis. To earn a scholarship. Okay, great. We went to vacation, 2 weeks vacation, no rackets, no practice in 2 years with nothing. When we returned, I said to him, who's going to be your coach? And he said, no, I want to hit with Sebastian, my other son, and my friends. Okay, 3 weeks with this, and I started contacting some college coaches, you know. And the US, if you don't have track record, you're done.
Yeah.
And they asked for me for a video and a ranking. I didn't have neither both. So I booked him on a tournament. He went there. And the day that he played, I was on our home. And he returned. And he said to me, I can make it. I can move myself. Mm-hmm. He lost the first round on a basic entry-level tournament, 6-4 in the third. And in that moment, I said to him, okay, I will help you a couple of weeks. I will train you. We shot the video, and then you'll find someone to train. And he said, yes. In that moment, he shifted. Mm-hmm. He accepted my help, you know. So 2 years without nothing, and he accepted. And it was a very tough path for him, 2 years without playing. Have to play tournaments, talk to coaches, and all the English exams. And it was very tough, but he accepted my help. And that was up the
right. But it was on his terms. He came to you and said, this is what I want to do. Yeah. And I had a similar experience with my son too. So I get that. And that's again, going back to what you said, that listen to your child. The child is always right. They may not be right for that moment, but when you go back and reflect on it, I think that's more what you mean, that, you know, I need to really hear what they're saying here. Their words may not be the right thing, but the intent behind the words is the right thing.
Yeah, and there is something more, you know, because you are not alone. I have a husband and I have a wife, and sometimes you are encapsulated in the thing and you don't listen to no one. And that's a good opportunity to listen to your significant other, because for sure he or she has something to say and to shift your perspective, you know, and that is important.
Yeah.
Because there are many people that talk to you that are outside your inner circle, and they have their own agenda, you know, but your significant other is the core. So you have to listen to him or her.
Yeah. And it is really helpful when one parent is the tennis parent and the other parent is really taking a back seat and is on the sidelines and, you know, maybe tending to the other children in the family or working a job that's paying for the tennis. My husband still refers to himself as the tennis payer because now I'm the one that he's paying for to play. But I think that is having that balance is really critical. If both parents are all in with the tennis, it makes for a very stressful environment.
Yeah. And what I've said to you, that every person has their own agenda, you know, and tennis is very tough. I know Richard Williams never make her daughters play the junior tournaments because it was a very tough environment. Mm-hmm. And that was a great decision.
Yeah. 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 I get it. I totally get it. All right. Well, Hernan, I want to just wind this down, but I would love to give you an opportunity to share with our audience how to contact you, how to get your books, how to sign up for your course and your newsletter and those things. So time to promote.
Okay. My website is hernanchosa.com. And there you can sign up for the newsletter. I have the course and the one-on-one consultation. I will come up maybe next week with a signature package, course, consultation, and book all in one, just to have the whole package available. And I think it's worth it to give it a chance and give it a chance to your son, no? To improve yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll have that link in the show notes on parentingaces.com as well. Can people reach out to you directly, or is there a contact link on the website?
My Instagram is Hernan.Chousa, and my LinkedIn is Hernan Chousa, so you can contact me directly.
Okay.
Not for the web page.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm pretty active in the social media and always giving some tips and advice to parents, you know.
Yeah, perfect. So we'll have all those links in the show notes on parentingaces.com. It's always such a pleasure to speak with you. I love kind of having the interaction with someone else who is working in the same arena, and I always learn from you. So thank you for that. Thank you for taking time. And I know it's a bit of a challenge with the time difference between Argentina and the States, but we always seem to find a way to make it work.
Yeah, we find a way because this is a lonely industry, you know. We are not too many, so we have to be back to back ourselves and share the small things that we experience to other parents, so we can make the path easier to their kids. Yeah. You know,
I love it.
The main thing that we are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Hernan, thank you again for taking time. To my audience, thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast. For tennis parents, by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.